Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Carrie Connell, who'll be telling us a little bit about FOP. So tell me a little bit about FOP.
So FOP is fibrodysplasia ossificans progressiva. And what it is muscles, tendons, connective tissue die and turn to bone. It's the only gene that can turn one organ into another. So you can't turn your liver into your brain or vice versa. But with FOP, the FOP gene takes connective tissue and actually turns it completely into healthy bone with actual blood flow to it. I feel like that is probably why there is, as an ultra-rare disease, a lot of the time you get no attention, no money, no research. But I feel like musculoskeletal health is one of the biggest costs on healthcare. And I believe that these companies that are brokering millions of dollars currently to find some compounds and medications are doing so to be able to explore and manipulate this gene to help the broader community, more common bone diseases. But FOP is one of the most disabling orthopedic conditions that there is. It usually expresses itself in childhood, probably the first 10 years of life, although we are finding out right now that there are variants out there. And right now that is our focus, is to find these families who maybe are misdiagnosed because they aren't classic FOP families. Generally, FOP should be picked up by a physician when the child is born, because one of the telltale signs of FOP at birth would be, in 95% of the cases, a crossed toe. So the greater toe and the toe beside it are crossed. It looks like there's a little bunion on the inside of the foot, and it's because there's missing cartilage. Because the skeletal frame is affected by the condition as well. So the fact that it's bilateral, it shows that it's not a birth defect. The families of these babies should be referred to genetics, where they should be able to pick it up. But unfortunately, a lot of these kids go through the cracks. People don't know enough about FOP because it is 1 in 2 million. That's what the research shows. However, again, we believe it is a lot more prevalent than 1 in 2 million. And I feel like over the next few years, as we reach out to families and doctors, we will find that number decrease to be, you know, maybe 1 in 1 million, but still very rare. FOP will start at the neck and the shoulders, just the way an embryo would form an infant. Generally, the neck, the shoulders, the upper body starts to fuse first. My daughter, her FOP affected her at 10 years old. Her shoulders locked, her neck and her spine locked. She had a quiet period. And then at 15, her hip went, her knee, her ankle, and her jaw fused. So basically every moving joint can be fused. Once they're fused, it's permanent. These kids can't get even a needle in their muscle, because a needle in the muscle could cause bone building and a flare-up. So these kids have flare-ups from viral traumas, such as getting a flu and running a high temperature, an infection, or getting a physical trauma, such as falling or being bumped. So it's a little bit of a vicious cycle. They fall, they have a flare-up, it locks the joint, that makes them more easily tip, so they fall, and it's a vicious cycle that way.
So when you say you're trying to reach out and identify more families affected, how are you going about this?
So in Canada, we actually just got a couple new board members, and that's going to be our focus. We will be looking at reaching out to radiologists, because radiologists come in contact with these kids because they show up with a bump, and often they think it's cancer. So they send them to radiology to have their x-rays. The radiologist can pick up fairly quickly in seeing knots of bone in the body, lesions of bone in different areas. So they can usually pick up on it. So we'll be reaching out to the radiologist, be reaching out to the obstetrics teams and the nurses, and be reaching out to orthopedics, and looking at those points of contact in the community for these kids, rheumatologists, places that you would refer a child if you couldn't diagnose the child, and you would send them on to a specialty. So we will be looking at trying to do some kind of communication to reach out to these bodies. In South Africa, they have started to reach out and look, because it's even more, it's even harder to get out to those families. They have even less in Africa, and so they have created a film, collaborated, and it's called Tin Man. And they will let us use that film as well. And so that film will be used globally to try to reach out to these families, reach out to these physicians. And some families have diagnosed their own kids. They've gone online and said, you know, painful lumps of bone or pain or crossed toes or whatever their child is exhibiting. And some families have brought it up because it's been in the media more, and they've diagnosed their own children. Whereas physicians, they have so many conditions and so many more common conditions. You know, if you hear hoof beats, look for horses, not zebras, and our kids are zebras. So you could understand why these physicians can't possibly know about all these conditions. So it will be our goal to reach out and kind of put it in front of them and just let them know that this is out there, and hopefully they'll share it. You know, it'll, you know, become more easily diagnosed.
So in terms of the work that's going on to get the word out and actually treat the condition, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Well, I mean, right now, the most positive thing is when your child was diagnosed with FOP before, it was pretty grim. Families don't necessarily want to reach out. They don't necessarily want to, because they're told there's nothing you can do and there's no cure. At this point in time, we have a carrot now to dangle and say to the families and say to the doctors, you know what, there is research going on right now. There are actual clinical drug trials happening that are at phase two. They've gone through the safety and efficacy. Now they're recruiting FOP patients. So currently my daughter is in a drug trial with a Canadian company, that Clementia Pharmaceuticals. Now this Canadian company just got bought by Ipsen, which is a French pharmaceutical company. So we're all kind of waiting to see what the impact of that will be. But Ipsen has a bigger global footprint. They can commercialize the drug when it comes down to that time, so that it can be accessible across the globe to different individuals. Regeneron also has a compound that's in clinical trials right now. We've been fortunate enough that they have come to Canada. They both are running trial sites at SickKids and at General Hospital in Toronto. And there's a third company, Blueprint, who is entering phase two. But we don't know if they'll come to Canada. I mean, right now, with healthcare cuts and with the funding that Canada gives and the lack of rare disease or orphan drug legislation, it's not really lucrative. It's not interesting. It's not a place that necessarily pharmaceutical companies want to come for orphan drugs or any drugs. The fact that we do have some drugs in the making, and it betters our chances at reaching out and getting the word out to find these families, because there is something for them that they should be aware of, other than just something to treat their pain.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
So when it comes to rare conditions, my friends, we've got to recognize if it's affecting one person, that's enough. We as a people need to constantly keep our eyes and ears open to the fact that a person with a disability might in fact be a person with a disability. If it's something we don't readily process right away, Who's to say we can't learn about it? Who's to say we can't broaden our knowledge base? A recent example came from our friend Kelsey Rose McDonald, who was asked to prove she had a disability. And that's really stuck with me. I mean, in her case, being on the autism spectrum, that's not something she should have to prove. But whether it's affecting one person or a billion, disability is disability. It affects a person, they're entitled to consideration, decency, and respect. And we as a people must always keep in mind that these are people with the same hopes, needs, dreams as anyone else, and that their potential can only truly be realized if we're going to take it upon ourselves to keep open hearts and open minds. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HANDILINK, numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. And coming up in a later segment of our show, we're going to hear a remarkable story of someone whose disability allowed him to be told that he would never do what he was most passionate about again. Truth is, that's not something we can allow. If you can't do it one way, do it another. Find a way. Learn to adapt. Disability life is not about limitations, my friends. It's simply about seeing the world through different eyes, looking at things from a different angle, recognizing that achievement is the product of motivation and shared opportunities. Give the right tools, the right support, and the right time, a person can achieve any great thing they set their heart to. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Advertise with CJAM 99.1 FM. We offer the most flexible and competitive rates for radio advertising in Windsor, Detroit. Our diverse programming can fit the needs of a range of organizations and businesses. Choose between daily rates for broad coverage or sponsor a show and target a specific audience. CJAM staff will work with you to craft your ad and choose the airtime that suits your needs. For more information, email statcjam@gmail.com, call 519-253-3000, extension 2525, or go to cjam.ca/advertise.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Carrie Connell. In this segment of our show, we're going to hear a little bit about Behçet's disease from Sandra McElgin. Tell me a little bit about Behçet's.
Behçet's disease is considered a rare disease. It's one of the rare diseases. It's umbrellaed under vasculitis disease. It's autoimmune. It's chronic. It's an auto-inflammatory disease. And that means that anywhere there are blood vessels, all through our body, Behçet's attacks. So it is vasculitis, inflammation throughout our whole body.
So what are some of the impacts of this condition?
Well, it can be very debilitating. It's very hard for a person with Behçet's disease to work. You're sick all the time. Unexpected illnesses, flu-like symptoms are what we have. So it's hard to do anything, make plans with family, parties, weddings. You never know. I mean, you have to listen to your body. A lot of times, you know, we miss a lot of events because of this disease.
So can you tell me a little bit about the work of the association?
Sure. Our mission is to support our Behçet's patients, their families, their caregivers. We have a 1-800 hotline, which I run, where people can call any time of the day or night around the world, can call our number, get the help that they need. We help them find doctors because our main doctor is a rheumatologist, and they're hard to find, and they're very hard to find a rheumatologist that knows about the shot and can diagnose. You know, we give them information, you know, that they can pass on to their doctors. We do fundraisers where we try to get the group together because it's hard to meet other Bichette's patients. We're rare. So we do fundraising events, walks, you know, trying to bring our patients together so that they can meet others, communicate, you know, share their stories. So that's a lot of what our mission is about.
So do you know offhand how many people are affected by the condition?
Yeah, we think approximately 15,000 to 20,000 in the United States. We may be off a little bit because, again, this disease is very misdiagnosed. A lot of people take years to find out that it's really Bichette's. They've been told they have lupus or MS. Those diseases mimic Bichette's, and Bichette mimics their diseases. So it takes a long time. So we think 15,000 to 20,000 in the United States. In other parts of the world, much more prevalent. It's, a lot of people have it. You know, whole families have Bichette's in the Silk Route communities and countries. You know, whole families can have Bichette's over there. But here it's more one person in the family that we find in the United States that have it. And, you know, so it is rare here.
So has there been any success with the association that stands out for you?
I feel we're successful because we do reach a lot of people. Some of the other organizations like the Vasculitis Foundation and NORD, you know, they help direct people to our organization. So I think it's, you know, we have a unique little association here that is just for Bichette's patients. So I want to say that's, you know, unique about us is that we're just for our disease.
So if you could send any message to the community about why it's important to keep the work going and to have the right information, what would you say?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that question.
So what would you tell the community about the importance of the Bichette's work that's going on?
Well, the work that we're trying to do is we're trying to raise funding for research, of course. There's a few research projects going on out there, and I'm involved in almost all of those studies. I try to get into every one. So I think the research is very important for us, you know, that we're out there trying to find anything we can about Bichette's, you know, and have our patients get the right information of where they can go to join in with that research.
So are there presently any treatments for it?
There's lots of treatments, and thank goodness we're living in an age where there's a lot of biologics that have been developed that work for our disease. We don't have any one real drug yet. I'm in a study on one drug that possibly will be for Bichette's only, but no, we use medications and treatments that are used for a lot of different diseases, you know, so it's some work for us, some don't. It's an ongoing process with a Bichette's patient, you know, to find a treatment plan that will work for you, for us.
So what are the next immediate steps for the association?
Well, of course, we want to raise those funds because we definitely want to be able to help in more research. You know, I think that's our most important thing right now is we're kind of left out there without much research. So, you know, we definitely want to find more out there, more people that will help us.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, thank you.
To end off today's show, folks, we're going to hear from Shane Davis, a man who had an injury, was told he might never be able to engage in the music he loved ever again. But through time and effort, he's been able to continue. So, tell me a little bit about your injury and when you were told you might not be able to do your music anymore.
Sure. So, December 23rd, 2017, I was hit by a van as I was crossing the street. The van was going about 60 kilometers an hour and hit me personally, threw me about 20 feet from my car that I was about to get into. And I had many injuries. Probably one of the biggest ones was my shoulder. So I had landed on my shoulder, and it dislocated and then relocated abruptly and damaged my auxiliary nerve, which essentially allows me to lift my arm above my head. And we didn't know that it was damaged that bad until a couple months later, and when I went to the neurologist, he had ran some tests and essentially figured out that the nerve was not regenerating. So he kind of put me on a pretty aggressive physiotherapy path after that. But I'm a pretty active guy, so I like to play football, and I go jet skiing, and I drum, and I think I didn't realize how much I used my arm, even in cooking. Shortly after that happened, I remember I was cooking some ribs in the oven, and I went to go take the rack out, and my arm just kind of gave out because I kept forgetting that I wasn't able to lift it, and it didn't have the strength to actually hold things up. So it was really frustrating for quite a while.
So, what sorts of methods did you use to cope with the injury?
So, I mean, one thing was I was trying to strengthen my left arm to kind of offset what my right arm could do, which was just as frustrating because I actually injured my left arm by overusing it, and we had to focus on that in physiotherapy as well. But essentially, for a while, I actually just went into pretty bad depression because I couldn't do all the things that I wanted to do before. So I would just, you know, sit alone and play video games or watch TV or read a book or whatever. But I'm usually a pretty social person, and I kind of withdrew from everybody and just spent time sulking by myself. And I think it wasn't until, like, I have four kids. I have a 6, a 5, a 2, and a 1-year-old. And I think one of the things that kept me going was them, because it was frustrating not being able to pick them up. It was frustrating, you know, my newborn baby boy not being able to put him up on my shoulders or lift him over my head or just play with my kids. And so I think that kind of drove me harder to really get into a recovery mode. And so just taking physiotherapy more serious. And it was super frustrating because I think over a six-month span of going to physio, it felt like I would make a little bit of progress, and then I would take 2 steps back. And then I would kind of do a little bit better, and then I would take 4 steps back. So it was really frustrating, I think, going through that process, but there was a lot of motivation around me to get better.
So can you tell me how your recovery has progressed in this all the time?
Sure. So the last time that I talked to my neurologist, he did another test and found out that the nerve had started to actually regrow and regenerate, which he was really surprised about. And I think a big part of that is through physiotherapy. Obviously, I'm a youth pastor, so I believe that there's a faith aspect to that as well, because I believe that we can all be healed. And so I think through that process, it's been a great drum again. I was up on stage just a little over a month ago playing drums on a worship service. I've been able to, my kids up, I've been able to do things back, like get a chunk of my life back. And so I think a lot of it is just getting out of that place of depression and being able to put the work in and take physiotherapy seriously. And, you know, if it's some sort of a faith phase where you are praying into something, and even those positive attitudes and people around you supporting you really helps kind of get through those really difficult times.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you, Cam.
Of course. Shane's a great example to me, folks, in so much as he's not ruled by his so-called limitations or the perceptions we as a society place on him about what a person can or cannot do. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of cases, people with disabilities beating the odds, doing what they were told is medically impossible. Fact is, that's really where it happens. That's where the barriers are broken. The walls come down. Once we realize something isn't completely hopeless, we can see that little shred of light, that possibility, not necessarily for an immediate cure, but just for the fact that things can get better. That's where we need to start digging through that darkness and finding our reason, finding our way to get to that hope. And I do maintain having kids and people you care about can be the best motivator on this planet. There's nothing worse than facing a condition and falsely believing you're entirely alone. No one cares, no one's there to support you. That can create a mindset which is an entirely separate disability. Depression, and I dare say, delusion, to think that no one would be able to understand or be there to help you. That's imposing more of a hardship on yourself than you need. And it is a lie. It's a falsehood. Maybe you don't find an answer right at first. So what do? You keep pushing for one. You don't just accept at face value that a situation's hopeless. One doctor may tell you you'll never drum again. Another one would say, oh sure, give it 6 months doing this, you'll be just fine. Fact is, we have to keep in mind, from a faith standpoint, doctors aren't God. They don't know everything. Yes, they know a lot. And yes, they have a great baseline. But what they don't have is all the answers. The human motivations, the strengths, things that get us out of bed in the morning. And the reasons we would have to push through another day of pain just to get to that place where we can share some time with those we love and to be a little better for it. No one person can define human strength because it's unique. It is a definition to each of us. We all have it in ourselves to get beyond what we consider a hopeless situation. In the middle of it, it's hard to see. It really is. You see yourself surrounded by pain and prospect of a hard medical situation, you're saying, how am I ever going to get through this? And then once you do, you look back and you say, I'm alive. I'm better for it. Then it becomes a question. What are you going to do with that life? Are you going to keep an open heart and an open mind? Or are you going to turn away from the very world that built you up enough to see you through the storm? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.